This afternoon, our Prime Minister flew into a country which may not exist by the end of the century, Tuvalu. Why? Well, for the Pacific Islands Forum. And quite a few of those islands may be disappearing along with Tuvalu. 18 nations make up the forum, from big players like PNG, Fiji, Vanuatu, to minnows like Kiribati, Nauru and the Cook Islands. And while Pacific nations' anxiety about climate change are dominating headlines, there's a lot of other issues. West Papuan independence, regional drug trafficking, and of course China's influence. Dr. Tess Newton-Cain is an expert on Pacific politics. She's based at the University of Queensland. And Tess joins us from our ABC Brizzy studios. Welcome, Tess.
Good evening, Philip. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk climate change first, and probably this will dominate our conversation. Scott has promised $500 million over the next 5 years, but it's a bit shonky, isn't it? Isn't it simply repackaging old commitments?
Well, certainly it's not new money. It's being repurposed from elsewhere within the aid budget. And we don't yet know what that means in terms of what current programmes will have to be cut or modified in order to free up that money. And obviously, as we know, the aid budget itself has been under a certain amount of stress for a number of years. So it's not new money. And it's certainly a significant amount of money. I think what's more galling, if you like, or what's more concerning for Pacific Island leaders is that it's aimed at things like adaptation and resilient infrastructure, which whilst they recognise that that's important and valuable, this isn't what they've been asking for. What they're really more concerned about is action on the part of Australia that addresses the causes of climate change rather than trying to put band-aids over the effects.
But Tess, they're getting a bit cheeky here. They want us to stop opening coal mines, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, that's a call they've made to the global community as a whole. They want everyone to stop opening coal mines. They have a particular cause of concern when it comes to Australia because, as Australia tells the leaders of the Pacific, whether it's via the Prime Minister or elsewhere, we're all family, and this is part, you know, the Pacific is very important to Australia. The Pacific step up is all about making sure that these relationships are renewed and reinvigorated. And so I think from a Pacific perspective, if you're going to use the language of family, you need to recognise that that comes with commitments or comes with obligations. And the biggest obligation is to listen when your family members tell you what they're concerned about.
We'll come back to this because it's going to be problematic in getting agreement between Australia and the islands on the final statement after the, you know, after the things wound up. Let's also look at the fact of Australia already helping fund extreme weather resilient roads and bridges in places like PNG. There's a hydropower project to power most of Honiara in the Solomon Islands. I mean, this is good stuff, isn't it?
All of these things are important initiatives, and they are ones that certainly address key development needs. The cost of electricity in Solomon Islands is ridiculously expensive, and so any attempt to anything that can help bring the cost of power down has only got to be a good thing. But basically, what Pacific Island leaders are pointing to is, you know, they're not asking Australia to help them transition away from fossil fuel based economies. Are they wanting to see what Australia can do with its own economy? And while that gap exists, while there is that that lacuna in the whole mix, it's very hard for Pacific Island leaders and Pacific Island people to feel that Australia is really standing with them on a platform. You know, as far as they're concerned, this is an existential threat that they're facing. And what they're looking for, what they've been asking for, is political and moral solidarity. So whilst the money can be used for good, it's not what they ask for.
We're already crossing Tuvalu's red lines for survival, said the Tuvaluan Prime Minister on Radio National Breakfast this morning. The situation is dire. It is urgent. We've been saying this for so many years, and now things are getting really bad. So his message is we must act urgently.
Yes, I mean, Prime Minister Enele Sopoanga and President Hilda Hine and Prime Minister Vereke Bainimarama, you know, there are a number of Pacific leaders who over the last few years have really occupied the, you know, strode the global stage when it comes to climate negotiations. They played key roles at the Paris negotiations. They play key roles at the Conference of Parties meetings. At the forthcoming climate summit convened by the UN Secretary General, they're expected to take centre stage, and they really do speak with a voice of moral authority in this space. Voices much bigger than would normally be accorded to what are really very small countries in terms of population sizes and economies. But given where they sit and the fact that they are already, they're already dealing with the impacts of climate change, their voices carry a lot of moral force and weight. And some of them, such as Prime Minister of Sopoanga, have been, you know, they've been involved in these, in these conversations for a very long time. And I think they are feeling a mixture of frustration and sadness, and in some cases, extreme anxiety on behalf of themselves and their people.
Tess, I mentioned the need to have agreement on the communique to finish the forum. Australia is trying to remove mention of phasing out coal in the communique.
Yes, from what we can gather from what's currently going on in Tuvalu, they've been very quite heated and frenzied negotiations around that text, which we expect to be delivered at the end of tomorrow when the leaders complete their retreat. And Australia has been seeking to modify the text quite significantly, including around, as you say, removing those references to coal. And that shouldn't come as a surprise, because really, although Scott Morrison and Alex Hawke are operating in the foreign policy arena this week, what they're really dealing with is an issue that is about domestic policy. And I think that makes it a very difficult line for them to tread, because essentially they don't have a mandate to give the Pacific what the Pacific says it wants, even if Mr. Morrison and Mr. Hawke wanted to.
Now, the Fijian Prime Minister is banging the table. Let's remind ourselves, however, that Fiji's been in and out of the forum.
That's right. So Prime Minister Bainimarama is at the forum this week. It's the first time he's been there since 2007. In 2009, Fiji was suspended from the forum as a result of a failure to hold elections as promised. When the elections were held in 2014, Fiji was reinstated into the forum, but Prime Minister Bainimarama has declined to attend because in 2010 he said that he felt the forum should exclude Australia and New Zealand because, he described them as they're not Pacific Islanders, and he also felt that they exercised too much influence within the group. Now, he's obviously reconciled himself to being at the forum this week with them there. He hasn't, he's walked back from his insistence on not attending. I think it's important to remember that Fiji has been participating in forum processes since 2014. The only bit that's been missing is the Prime Minister's attendance at the leaders' meeting, and that's what we've seen this week.
Talking to Tess Newton-Kane, Tess, I wasn't aware that so much cocaine flows through the Pacific, because apparently Australia and New Zealand have the highest street price in the world. This is on the agenda to discuss?
It is. So this is an area of regional security which has come to prominence quite recently, and I'd certainly recommend your listeners to follow the work of my colleague Jose Sousa Santos in New Zealand, who is really the expert on this. But essentially, all those issues around transnational crime, transnational and organised crime, are part of the bigger security picture, and they are captured in a declaration that was signed at the forum last year called the Boy Declaration on Regional Security, which identified a range of security threats that the region needs to address. And certainly this issue of illegal movements of drugs through the region, whereas previously they didn't touch the sides, if you like, they just moved on through. Increasingly, there seems to be a lot more indication that now there's some leakage into Pacific Island countries, particularly Fiji, Tonga and Samoa. And that raises issues as to whether there are the appropriate mechanisms and services to deal with those, to deal with the after effects of that, whether it's in terms of increased crime or drug addiction. A lot of these countries don't have access to the right services to deal with those issues.
Tess, we're out of time and we've hardly touched the issues. China, of course, is what's known as a dialogue partner at the forum, but of course it's still throwing its weight around.
Well, China is expected to be present at the dialogue meeting or the dialogue partners meeting on Friday. Hopefully, it'll be a bit smoother than it was last year. Last year, they staged a walkout because they weren't given an opportunity to speak. The Secretariat's been doing a lot of work around making sure everyone's clear about what the protocols and processes are. So for everyone's sake, we're hoping that that goes a lot more smoothly this time.
Ellie Nell on RN. Download us wherever you get your podcast or listen on the ABC Listen app. And you've just been listening to Dr. Tess Newton-Cain, an expert on Pacific politics based at the University of Queensland. Tess, thank you very much for your time.